I'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session of Mesa City Council for Thursday, June 17th, 2010. Before we begin, we've got a couple of issues that are going to involve quite a number of people, so the agenda is probably going to be
moved around.
Thank you.
There you go.
Mr. Vice Mayor. I was looking for a technical term there.
Don't make it hard. Just simple.
So after we get done with the review of the agenda, we may shuffle some things a bit. So just to be aware. The first item on the agenda is to review next Monday's regular council meeting agenda. Page 2. Now, as we get into the ordinance on item 7, Ms. Spinner, I'm assuming that we can handle those as a single item as we did last year?
Yes, Mayor.
Okay. A single motion, I should say. Not a single item. Okay. Page 3. Page 4. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, on item 10B, it's the first time it comes up that the sales tax rate says 9.1, isn't it 9.05? And unless I'm really last a nickel somewhere, or not a nickel.
Well, it depends on which city you're.
Well, it's in Mesa.
Okay.
And I'm like, we don't round off to. And that was on like 3 or 4. That just happened to be the first time, and I wonder if it was a typo. And I'm sorry I didn't ask sooner.
Mayor, council member, it looks like that vendor's located in Tucson.
Oh. I'm sorry.
That's right.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
If they want to move to Mesa.
They could. Yes.
And pay a lower sales tax. Okay. Anything else on page 4? Page 5? Page 6? Page 7? Councilmember Higgins. Council, I'm so used to doing that. I'm looking right at you. Force of habit, I'm sorry.
I am so taking the screws out of your chair in your office.
Councilmember Scott Summers.
Too late now.
Representing District 6 in this wonderful city.
Item 11G is Maricopa County Community Wildfire Protection Plan. I was hoping to have Gil do a very brief summary, because we don't typically think of Mesa as being susceptible to wildland fires. I thought it would be a good opportunity to look at the areas of the city and what the risks are for our community and why we have to do this.
Good morning, Mayor, Councilmember Summers. Thank you. The wildland protection, countywide wildland protection plan, is really facilitated by the Maricopa County Division of Emergency Management. They've asked 43 of the signatories around Maricopa County to participate in the process, and essentially we put together a plan, a document. This is the first time for this particular document to identify areas throughout the county that are high in fire hazard or have the potential for that. And obviously I do have a slide here.
Thank you, sir.
Since I don't know if you can see that color very well, but Mesa is really, we have a very low potential in the far northeast and the southeast parts of the city around Usury Mountain and then around the Queen Creek area. So if you can see this map, it kind of gives you an idea of what our potential is. Essentially, obviously, we do live in a desert. There are potentials for fire hazards, and again, mainly around washes and areas where water has run, there has been brush growth. So they do anticipate this to be a fairly active wildland season.
Thanks, Gil. That was perfectly brief. I found it interesting to discuss, because like on the news yesterday, I think it took them a full 15 minutes just to get off of the wildfires that are burning. There are three separate ones. Mm-hmm. One happened in Scottsdale yesterday, the Patriot Fire, which was part of the wildland, what's referred to as the wildland-urban interface, which was the intermix between houses and desert, and a lot of areas, particularly up in the desert uplands and along the north side of Mesa, there's really no boundaries between a house and that desert, and there's some significant risks. Even in Mesa, which we tend to think of as more of an urban, suburban area.
That's true. And also, the county does prepare pamphlets that tell residents that they are responsible for their own property. They need to clear areas between brush and their residents to minimize or prevent fire damage at their homes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, Councilmember Dina Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. Did we pass page 6? I think we did, by an item. Can I ask a question on page 6, please?
Page 6.
Item 11D. It's talking about the elimination of fees for when somebody would like to order the executive budget book. But what I don't get is we're eliminating a fee, but we're not eliminating the opportunity to actually order it. Well, I would have thought we would have done both.
But we don't eliminate the opportunity for them to have access. It's all on the web base right now, and they can print it out themselves. Right. We don't publish a book.
So, but no one in the report does it say the book is not available to order personally for publish. It just says we're eliminating the fee, so it's kind of weird. You know what I'm saying? It says you can get it online at the library, but it says we're eliminating the fee. But it doesn't say anywhere where. So, I would assume by that I could still call and order and get one, because you didn't say you're removing the access to order, just the fee for it. So it's kind of odd.
And if that came to that case, I would provide them a CD.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Page 8. Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you. Mayor, item 13A. I'm a little confused. It was in the staff report regarding the adjustments to the fortune teller and liquor Series 5 fees. It says the Audit and Finance Committee proposed adjustments and changes, and after considerations, they were removed. So does that mean we're changing those or we're not changing those?
Okay, the fortune teller, the committee had some differing opinions on that. So our intent is to not change those fees at the present time. And the liquor Series 5 is actually the government. And while there is a requirement that we pay the fee to the state, we withdrew the plan to pay the fee to ourselves just for the initial application, if I recall correctly. Right. But we will do the annual.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Brady, 11N. It's a new item. Were you going to give a brief explanation of that? Mr. Ames.
Morning, Mayor and Council. On the agenda is item 11N, which is really begins the process to place on the November ballot a franchise election for Southwest Gas. Ann Seiden is here from Southwest Gas Corporate Affairs, as well as Jack Schaefer from the City Attorney's Office. We have had for years, well, since 1989, a 20-year franchise agreement with Southwest Gas. There's one that goes back prior to that one. It's elected by the voters, or approved by the voters, for 20 to 25-year periods. You have before you, for consideration, the new agreement that has been discussed and negotiated with Southwest Gas that covers 25 years. Again, it'll be placed before the voters in November. It is a model of a franchise agreement that is really based on their standard agreement with the other cities that they have recently gone through this franchise arrangement with. It continues our current 2% franchise fee that they would pay based on gross utility revenues, as well as a new capital expenditure program where they would retain 2% also of gross revenues to pay for all costs related to adjustments, changes, plans, permit fees, and things of that nature required by us as they work in our right-of-way and things of that nature. So this, again, places that new franchise agreement on the ballot, or starts the process to place it on the ballot. It'll be part of the call for the election on July 1st, and one of our several items that'll be on the ballot then November 2nd.
Could you go back just a bit, just to make sure that anyone who's watching, whatever, what is really a franchise agreement with a utility such as Southwest Gas? Just very, very basically.
Probably turn that one over to Ann from Southwest Gas and let her really discuss that if she wants to.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Very good question that you've asked. Essentially, what a franchise agreement is it grants Southwest Gas the right to serve gas customers here in the Mesa area, and it defines the relationship that we have with the city in terms of doing business in the public rights of way. So it basically just formalizes that relationship.
And as you know, Mayor, Mesa is somewhat unique in that we own our own gas utility, and that operates in part of the city, and then Southwest Gas operates in the other part of the city. So our customers are served both by city, but by either City of Mesa Gas or Southwest Gas.
Okay. Councilmember Fenter.
By entering into this agreement, does this prevent us at all in the future by possibly looking at a change in arrangements of a swap of gas companies or anything out to Pinal County or Magma Gas Company? Would this prevent this at all, or in anybody's viewpoint?
No, Councilmember Fenter, it absolutely does not. This puts in place an agreement that will go for about 25 years. That's the length of the agreement. But if at any time both of our parties agree, we can open up that agreement and make changes. But that's really irrespective of any choices that we choose to make regarding Magma or the other systems.
Okay.
So it doesn't confine us in any way.
Great. I'd just like to express a personal opinion. I think I've heard the Vice Mayor. I hope we look at the near future of any opportunities there might be there to work out a business arrangement and see how it more, you know, benefits both companies. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Mayor and Councilmember Fenter, I know I've had that discussion with Ann and her counterpart, Jose Esparza, and they're fully aware, and we've had those discussions in the past. So.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks, Ann. Note that item 13C is on page 8 is not on the consent agenda. That still holds, Councilman Kavanaugh. Okay. Page 9.
Mayor.
Mr. Brady.
Mayor, if you'll just notice that everything on page 9 under item 14 are being proposed to be continued to July 8th.
Okay.
I think that holds for all those
items,
right, John? Yeah.
Okay, and then page 10. All right. Thank you. I know we have some people here asking to speak regarding item number 3. We normally at a study session don't take comments from the public. However, due to the nature of this item, we'll let you speak, but that's the good news. The bad news is we have a couple of items in executive session that we need to take care of fairly quickly because of some schedules and things. So right now, this is the shuffle we're talking about. We're going to move into executive session for probably about a half an hour at the most. And then we will come back and immediately go to item number 3, which will then be followed by item number 2. Is that confusing enough? Okay. So I'll entertain a motion, and then at that time, and I apologize for those of you who have showed up. This is one of those unavoidable conflicts. But if you can just hang close or hang loose for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes or so, hopefully we'll be back and we'll pick up item 3 when we come back. So I have a motion from the Vice Mayor to enter an executive session, a second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Well, in executive session, we'll be back hopefully in just a few minutes. Thank you. Thank you so very much. We're back. Thank you for your patience. And okay. Oh, okay.
I didn't do it.
No, I was wondering what you were saying. All right. The next item on the agenda is actually item 3. Here, presentation discussed by direction on the convenience store ordinance.
Except who's talking?
Who's talking? Chief?
Good Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Council. Before we get started, first of all, I just want to thank all the business owners and participants that helped us probably over the last year in trying to come up with a septet ordinance, convenience store ordinance that everyone would at least buy into as far as the concept and taking a lot of input. And I do want to thank them for their time. We've had several meetings together. Mayor and Council, the police department currently is seeking direction for the development of a new city ordinance governing convenience stores that would impact SEPTED, implement SEPTED principles. Just a quick brief on what SEPTED is. SEPTED is a it stands for crime prevention through environmental design. It's a crime prevention philosophy based on the theory that proper design and effective use of the built environment can lead to a reduction in crime. Just to give you a little background, reference this proposed ordinance. In June of this year, the police department gave a presentation to the Public Safety Committee on our proposed SEPTED ordinance and security plans. And throughout, over the last year, we've been refining that proposed ordinance. And we had several meetings with key stakeholders. Those various meetings included the larger corporate businesses, along with some of the smaller businesses, including public meetings to incorporate as many of the stakeholders as we could to bring in. In March and May of this year, the department returned to the Public Safety Committee with refinements to the proposal after input gathered from the stakeholders. And in May, the Public Safety Committee recommended that we bring the proposal to full council as we are here today. The SEPTED goals is to protect the health and safety and welfare of the citizens of Mesa by reducing crime and calls for service, deterring crime through prevention, increasing the successful prosecution of crime that occurs in convenience stores in the city, and freeing up valuable police resources, as we know, have been decreased over the last year or so. Really what SEPTED is setting that culture of having good crime prevention practices within the business to avoid not just crime, but to allow a safer environment for the businesses and for the community. Just to give you an overview of some of the statistics on why this really was brought to the forefront in the first place, and just to give you, these are 2009 statistics in relation to total calls for service within the city and how those relate to convenience stores and shopliftings. As you can see in the first box of citywide, total CFS stands for calls for service, which is 318,760. In relation to that, out of those, the total for convenience stores is 8,840. On the total for top 10 convenience stores, you can see that we have about 100 convenience stores within the city of Mesa. So out of that, the top 10 represent almost 40% of your overall calls for service. If you look on the far right on shoplifts compared to other thefts, the majority of our calls for service are shoplifts. For total for convenience stores, 1,592 shoplifts in relation to 43 other theft calls.
Chief Mazur, can you help us a little bit defining what you would put in the convenience store category? Is it like a small shop with gas, without gas, standalone, part of a center? I mean, how do you parse out what a convenience store is, just to understand? I mean, when you said there was 100, I would have thought there was a lot more than that.
Yeah, and what I'll do is I'll read you the definition that we utilize, that we're being consistent with.
Perfect.
The city definition. A convenience store means a retail establishment that sells a limited line of groceries, prepackaged food items, tobacco, magazines, and other household goods, primarily for off-premise consumption, and typically found in establishments with long or late hours of operation and relatively small building of less than 7,500 square feet. This classification includes small retail stores located in the same parcel as or operated in conjunction with a service station. So really it's the one of the key elements is the 7,500 square feet.
Okay.
And that would, in this ordinance, would exclude like your Walgreens, your CVSs, and those, because those are larger.
But Circle K and AMPM and Quick Trip and some of the convenience marts. Exactly. Got it. Thank you.
Councilmember Higgins.
Actually, just a question off of your question. So it's only with a service station. Is that the other clarification?
No.
I thought that's what you just said.
It may include.
It may include.
Yes.
Okay, so size. It's the size thing. Okay, thanks.
Size, hours of business, and what they sell.
And just looking at some of the data, and you don't have this in front of you, because I just wanted a comparison of how we're doing so far in 2010. Really, we're not seeing a huge decrease or increase in shopliftings. We're sitting at, and this is up through May, total shoplifts of at convenience stores at 619. So we're relatively staying steady. Overall for the city on thefts, and I don't have this broken down as far as shopliftings, but we're up about 3% in overall thefts for the city. So we're still seeing today a significant impact on our shopliftings and thefts at convenience stores. The next slide I want to cover is elements of the ordinance. What is included within the ordinance? And obviously, these are just bullet points, and there's a lot of, I call it lawyer lingo, in the ordinance, but I'm going to give you kind of the meat and potatoes of it. The proposed ordinance contains a required store registration, which would be an annual registration. We're recommending that there be no registration fee, and the stores would have to display their registrations within the stores. The penalties would be, violations would be civil offense. We are recommending a warning on first offense and 14 days to correct any issues that are deemed necessary to be in compliance. The fines would range from $250 to $500. The police department would be responsible for inspecting the premises during business hours to ensure compliance. Surveillance cameras are recommended, and just some detail, two-color digital high-resolution cameras inside the store, two-color or black-and-white digital high-resolution cameras on the exterior of the building. Maintain of record recordings for at least 30 calendar days that could be used for evidentiary purposes if needed. The security issues, we're recommending in the ordinance that the convenience stores provide and maintain, operate an alarm system. Silent panic or hold-up alarms. They're required to have proper signage, including trespassing signs, security signs, and height markers for identification of potential suspects.
Chief, I think Councilmember Higgins has a question.
Yeah, just a quick question, Chief. You said recommended cameras. Is it recommended or are they required?
In the ordinance, these would be required. And when I use the term recommended as the ordinance proposal in itself. But, yes, all these would be requirements of the ordinance.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Maintain visibility, clear and obstructed view of cash register through all windows and public entrance doors. You may drive through by convenience stores and notice all the advertising covering the whole front of the businesses, and it's very difficult to look in to be able to see if anyone's in trouble, or having that seclusion can give the perpetrators a sense of they can do whatever they want inside the building. Proposal to require annual employee safety training, trespass enforcement program, authorize the police department to enforce all applicable trespass laws, the illumination of exterior entrances, the removal of graffiti within 48 hours, and the requirement to have beer coolers locked and beer floor displays secured from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. Those are the non-selling of alcohol hours every day. Also, we recommend in the proposal a waiver option for smaller stores or independent stores in older buildings that may not be able to comply with the ordinance. They can apply to have a security plan in lieu of complying with the elements of the ordinance. And just let me briefly tell you what a security plan is. A security plan is a SEPTED-based plan designed specifically for an individual store. That being, if for some reason a store cannot comply with, for example, one of the stakeholders brought up the fact that if we require the no obstruction in the front of the building, that could impact their ability for their display items or their inventory. And it could impact 50% of their floor space. That business could apply for a waiver, and we could come up with a security plan which would be specific to that particular store. That's very similar to what Tempe does with it, with their ordinance that requires primarily security plans. Also, stores in compliance but still experiencing high crime and excessive calls for service could be required to comply with the security plan in addition to the ordinance. That's for the stores that, even though they find in compliance, they're having additional problems that may need to be addressed. And we can institute a security plan. It may be to have maybe extra lighting or some type of extra security to help minimize the criminal activity at that particular store. Briefly talk about the industry concerns. This has been a challenge, trying to bring something together that we can find the balance, that we're utilizing good SEPTED principles and having the balance where the stakeholders feel comfortable that it'll be effective. The stakeholders do feel that the new ordinance penalizes all stores when they feel the problem is limited to a very few. Stakeholders would like the city to pilot the new ordinance, conduct an evaluation after an established time period, determine if it's effective or not. In addition, there are many other concerns, and including the cost, specific cost for having to have cameras, having to have special lighting. I think they're very concerned that this ordinance will interfere with their operations. So what we bring to you today is the direction to go forth and with our proposal for an ordinance, knowing that we have really, we started with something that was very large, and we've really started to narrow it down, trying to find that balance of instituting good crime prevention principles and having buy-in from the store owners, and something that we believe that will have an impact on the calls for service and the crime at the convenience stores.
Okay. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
And again, just to add to Chief Mazin's presentation, our Public Safety Committee has been working with the police department over the last 2 years to identify areas of criminal activity that consume a great portion of our resources. And we've been looking at ways and partnering with the department and the community of trying to address those, which is why you're seeing presentations like this on convenience stores. You'll be seeing additional proposals coming forward dealing with hotel motel issues, because again, we have significant calls for service, and we believe as a public safety committee that the application of crime prevention principles can go a long way to reduce those calls for service, create a safer environment for employees and owners of the stores as well as customers of the stores. And as Chief Mazza pointed out, this proposal has had a long history. We started working on this, our committee did, over a year ago, and we first started with simply looking at trying to adopt the Tempe's plan, which was a kind of a security plan approach, and we got pushback on that. We said, let's go back to the drawing board. We need to work a lot more with the business community to try to identify a proposal that works. And what we have here, what our committee has recommended to you, is a proposal that we think builds in enough flexibility to take account of the concerns, particularly of the smaller businesses who are in older buildings in our community or who are in buildings that were converted from other uses to be transformed into convenience stores. We have many of the large chains. QuikTrip, as an example, has long incorporated almost all of these security principles. And you'll see that we have much fewer calls for service at organizations that adopt those principles. There are particular issues that may be applicable to large corporate operations where we might need to make some changes in the proposal that you have just to address corporate ownership of many stores. But the overall, the ordinance really is designed to provide a set of standards that are best practices in the industry to minimize the risk of crime and harm to employees and to the public. But at the same time, and this is where I know our committee got very positive feedback from the business community, they liked the idea of us having the flexibility of, again, particularly for the smaller stores, the non-chain stores, whose buildings may be unique, to be able to work with the police department to craft a plan that works for them, that meets at least the principles of crime prevention. And so that's, our committee, as I said, has looked at this issue for 13 months now, and we think we've come a long way to developing a proposal that can make a significant difference in calls for service, in consumption of public safety resources, and but maybe more importantly, creating a safer environment for the owners, their employees, and customers of the stores. And we've done so in a way that to not be heavy-handed. We know that there are costs associated with this. We think these are costs that are necessary costs from a public safety perspective. We do believe that businesses that incorporate these recommendations will benefit from their insurance coverages. I know their liability carriers or worker comp carriers will appreciate making a safer workplace. We understand that there should be a transition period for stores to come into compliance with this, and I know our committee would recommend a reasonable transition period different from our typical ordinance, which goes into effect 30 days after enactment. And the council might choose to have 90, 120, or 180, 180 days to for the ordinance to go into effect. Our committee agreed on a particular time, other than we felt the council should look at a reasonable transition time for it to go into effect. But I do know that from my colleagues on the Public Safety Committee, we believe this is an important piece of legislation for us to look at. We have worked hard with the business community. I'm sure there's going to continue to be comments, recommendations for improvements or clarifications in the proposal that moves along. But at least at the heart of it, we think we've presented a package to you that helps meet the needs of the police department and the community, and hopefully the business community. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Chief, could you go back to slide 6, that table that you have? The statistics. Yeah, it doesn't show up very well there. And I may have totally missed this as I was reading through as you were presenting. The crime statistics, as you go down to convenience stores and then the third line, total for top 10 convenience stores. Could you explain that again for me?
If you took the top 10 out of 100, let's say, because we have a little over 100 convenience stores, 10 of those stores out of the 100 represent that 4,110 calls for service, which illustrates.
So we have 10 convenience stores citywide that account for almost half of the total calls.
Correct.
And how many of those stores lack what you're talking about here? Where are they in the city, and how many would you say are deficient as far as the things you're asking for here? I guess what I'm asking is, if you have 10 that account for half, I mean, if we concentrate on those 10, don't we get rid of half the calls?
We have done a lot of work, Mayor and Council, with those stores, including we have done some SEPTED assessments. There's elements of the ordinance that were required that they're already doing, and there's some that are not. One of the biggest differences probably would be the securing of the beer on off hours and the netting of the beer on off hours. That's one thing that they're not doing.
Okay, so if we got those 10 stores to lock their beer cases between 2 and 6 a.m., what? How many of those calls would we get rid of?
Our estimate is we would get rid of hopefully a lot of them. But that would be, and I'll give you a little history on
this. Wouldn't that be a lot easier than coming through a whole new huge ordinance?
When we first started this, we were proposing a security plan concept similar to Tempe. Yeah. And what that is you only apply the security plan to those 10 stores that are giving you the most calls for service. That was originally what we were trying to do. We came against a lot of resistance from the retailers because they felt that that was going to single out their particular store. And it would be whether it was one particular chain or an example was, okay, I'm having trouble with my store, but now you're gonna institute a security plan on me. My customers will just go across the street. So we came against a lot of opposition.
Wait, my customers or my guys doing the beer runs?
Actually, in the industry, they feel that both. It would push customers and perpetrators across the street.
Okay, so I understand this. So what we're saying is that we got ABC Convenience, and if there's an ABC Convenience store, I apologize. I don't mean to single anyone out. But say you got ABC on one corner, and you got somebody else across the street, kitty corner. Correct. All right. What you're saying is that if ABC has to put a security plan in place, they're afraid that their beer runners are going to go kitty corner to the guy across the street and buy from there, or steal from there, or both.
This was an issue brought up by the stakeholders. They felt that
I can understand why.
they wanted a proposal that was equally distributed amongst all of them. And that's where we came up with the ordinance concept, because now the rules apply to everybody. Everybody has to go with what, you know, the rules are. And that really was a shift from, we started with exactly what you're talking about, just doing security plans at those individual stores. We came up against a lot of resistance from the stakeholders. They wanted equal rules to everybody so it wouldn't impact just one.
So I'm a little bit confused then. So, because I'm hearing two stories now. And they may both be correct. The first one is that they didn't want us targeting the high incident locations because they felt that penalized those high incident by forcing them to do things that others wouldn't have to do. So then you said, hey, listen, if you're going to make rules, do it across the system. But I also have those people in XYZ convenience store who's out in an area of town who hasn't had a beer run all year who says, wait a second, why are you punishing me?
Right.
Because I'm sitting out in the middle of nowhere and I'm not the one who's calling the police, but you're forcing me to put in thousands of dollars of security that my history and my experience shows is unneeded. So, I mean, how we balance? Is it just the ones yelling louder than the other one is, or?
Mayor Council, what you got here, and I'll be up front, you have the larger corporate businesses that want the ordinance because it affects everybody. And then you have your independents that just want the security plan because exactly what you said, they don't feel that they're having the problems. What we're trying to do is come up.
So we listen to the corporate, the big guys?
That's why we're trying to come up with a balanced.
Nice way of dodging the question. I like that. I'm impressed.
A balanced ordinance that has, we have really set the recommendations that go across the board we feel are good crime prevention principles that everybody should be doing. But we also put in the waiver for those stores that can waiver out of things if they can show justification. And then we also put in the security plan that even if we have somebody that's meeting all the requirements, but they're still just having a lot of crime, we can go in and say, you know, you should do A, B, and C also. So we're trying to find that balance because the SEPTED principles that are in there, I would say outside, probably about 98% of them are just good SEPTED principles that a lot of, especially your larger chains, are already doing. It's some of the like the locking of the beer, the netting of the beer. Those are the things that are really we're trying to get.
Well, but I understand, and I'll play devil's advocate a little bit here. You know, if I'm a QT, I got one master plan that I apply to a store, every store I build. You know, I develop one floor plan, and then I replicate it. So, you know, when you look at the cost per unit of that plan, you know, it goes down with each store you build because you can spread it over literally hundreds of stores. If I'm an independent operator to go in and do the same plan, you know, I'm eating that plan in one store, and so it's not really accurate to say that the big guys are doing a better job. They just have a big department, and they're building hundreds of stores, and therefore they do it once, and you know the cost per store of implementing that plan is literally in the hundreds of dollars, whereas the cost of an independent to come in is in the tens of thousands of dollars perhaps. So I can understand why there's a little bit of a disparity there. Councilman Richards.
Those big guys aren't the ones that we're having to send the cops to 50% of the time. It's the little guys. So this is a resource allocation issue.
So you're not supposed to double devil advocate my devil advocate.
This is about resource allocation. And if there's a lot of stores that are causing the problem, we need to figure out a solution. And it sounds like through a stakeholder-driven process, we've come up with enough flexibility in having an ordinance that I'm guessing probably what 75-80% of stores are going to be in compliance as soon as it goes through. So the big guys are already doing all this stuff. We pass the ordinance, they're already in compliance.
Councilmember Richards, I do want to make a clarification. The majority of our, and I don't want to single anybody out, a business out, the majority of our problem stores are not the independents. It's the larger
chain. Now, the question, let's go back to my original question.
I'll say it. It's Circle K.
You better have the data to back that up. The question I have is it, I know you do, but let's talk about it rather than just throw it out there. The question is it the type of store or is it the location in the city or a combination?
I believe it's a combination. Obviously...
do we have a cluster? These 10 stores, are they clustered in a certain part of the city? Are they spread out in a certain type of neighborhood, or are they mostly a certain type of design?
The central district and Dobson district of our police district would have your higher number of calls for service at convenience stores.
So, and is it an XYZ convenience store, same basic type that was maybe built? Is it a function of when they were built, or is it a function of maybe a corporate plan? If it is a corporate,
I think it's a combination of policy on the it could be the design of the convenience store. It could be the management policies. If a lot of your independent and I'm not promoting this, but a lot of independents. They have their own security, and a lot of the
customers... Well, it's their neck. I mean, it's their livelihood.
And where some have policies where aren't so apprehension of suspects, and it's a combination of location, obviously. It's a combination of the design of the store, the management policies and practices of those particular stores. The ordinance really started off very broad. I mean... When you saw this thing year over year ago, it required two clerks per store, which is, that would really have a financial impact on the stores. What we pared it down to was trying to come up with just basic SEPTED principles that everyone could live by and that we feel everybody should try to include in their business.
Councilmember Summers.
Other than the big chains wanted to have something that applied equally to everybody, I think there's another reason and a more important reason from our perspective of why a blanket policy that's fair and equitable and applies to everybody is important. It's a lot of the crimes that you're talking about, many of them anyway, are crimes of convenience. It's a smash and grab. They walk in, it's a beer run. They're grabbing the beer by the door and they're walking out the door. That's the vast majority. And then those people are drinking the beer, going driving, and getting into wrecks. That's the community's issue. That's the problem that we're having. If we apply it to any one business, then they'll just go to the next one. I've been through these stores, we all have, and the beer is there at the front, probably because the beer companies are paying for it to be up in the front, and it's insecure. And if we apply to one business and say, well, you have to bring it back into the back and lock it up, then they'll just go to the next one down the road, whether that's the Circle K or ABC
convenience store. So having these rules apply fairly helps prevent the problem where the crime that's occurring in one store now just gets pushed down the road. So it's something to consider as well. And secondly, we have added some flexibility to it, I think, by utilizing the security plans, which we inserted into this, will add some flexibility. And then the third element I wanted to raise, because I haven't heard it yet, that was brought up at the Public Safety Committee, is we talked about the opportunity for the police department to put together a grant program, particularly for the smaller operators, to help fund this. And have we looked at that? Where is it? Have we identified grant opportunities or funding opportunities for this through everything from CDBG to COPS grants? Where are we on this?
Mayor and Council, we have not identified funding for that, but
we're continuing to
look for something that would fit into that. I think what we want to do is obviously get direction if this is something that we want to go for, if Council wants us to go in this direction, and then really try to, if we can, secure some funding that would help with maybe cameras or things like that.
And I think that would be a good idea. I mean, we've used these dollar-for-dollar grants and other things. We're using one right now in, as soon as the budget's approved, right, downtown Mesa with fire sprinklers. We're doing a dollar-for-dollar grant for businesses in a particular area to help fund improvements in fire safety. It seems that we could do something like that for policing, particularly for the small owners who are going to struggle more with financing some of these improvements.
Can I ask a question? Did you consider as part of the process something along the line with the, you know, the fire alarm approach where, you know, you get one free, two, three, four, and then it's accelerating fines? I mean, if you have a convenience store that maybe the propensity of crimes are beer runs, you know, it's a low incident type of, not a low incident, but a, you know, someone goes in, grabs a beer and drives off. Did you ever consider that, you know, if those are the ones we're answering, and that is a waste of resources if we keep answering that, of maybe having something that gives an incentive to a store to enact or implement their plan by saying if you don't, you're going to be held responsible, basically through an accelerated fine structure for exceeding a limit of calls.
Yes, that is correct. We've been at this project actually for 3 years now, and we've done a lot of different things, and that did come up in some of our discussions. One of the pushbacks from the retailers was, well, then we just won't call you.
Okay.
And so then you won't know where your crime is. And that is, you know, a public safety issue, you know, that we were concerned about as well. So we didn't want to go down that road where people just had a crime and then decided they wouldn't call us. Because, you know,
it seems like we're playing, and I'm going to play a little devil's advocate, it seems like we're playing both sides of the issue here. We're saying that this is important enough that we care that they call, but it's a misuse of resources for us to go answer the calls.
What we want,
you know, which side are we falling down on here?
We would like to prevent the crimes from occurring in the first place. You know, we don't want them to occur and then for them not to call us, because that's not really in the best interest of the community either. So what we'd like for is for them to tighten up their business model there so people aren't going in there and committing those crimes. And we think that we can maybe address it with these.
And Councilmember Higgins has a comment. Then Councilmember Katz.
I don't know. We actually, to answer your question, Mayor, we did add the first warning. In 14 days to make those corrections if they were out of compliance with the ordinance.
So what, I mean, the mayor was saying earlier, basically there are 10 stores that are causing 46% of the problems, but we can't just address those 10 stores and legally without having an ordinance that affects everybody. Is that kind of what we're saying, city attorney?
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, I haven't seen the actual draft ordinance, but we would have to look to make sure the law has to be non-discriminatory. So is there criteria, or are there criteria we can develop? I don't know if the group has looked
but
at that.
Do you even need a formal criteria in order to go in and help somebody with issues in their store that are causing problems?
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, what you're talking about is similar to the Tempe ordinance, which is what's called the security plan, which that security plan applies to those individual stores that are having problems. But it does have to be an ordinance form for us to have any to say, rather enforcement, to say these are not recommendations, these are requirements. That's where we were going initially. That is one way. I mean, if it's the direction of the council that we want to go back to that form, that, I mean, we have all the research already. What we did is we started going back towards the way of an ordinance that covers equally everybody, but still having the waiver option for those that may, for whatever reasons, couldn't meet the ordinance.
Has a stakeholder group given you any indication to how many of the independent or smaller stores would have to make drastic changes to comply with this? Do you have a feel for what that is? I mean, we're assuming that some of your newer corporate-type stores and even independents, if they're new, have already implemented these kind of designs, so they wouldn't be affected. But you're looking at the older and the ones that maybe have a lower incident of crime and yet don't comply with what this ordinance would require, do you have any idea or feel for how many stores we're basically asking to spend this money where they really don't need to?
Mayor and Council, we have met with a lot of those. I couldn't give you a number, but they were very concerned about the cost. They were concerned that they were very concerned about the obstruction portion of the ordinance because a lot of their inventory is up front and covers those front windows. With their input, that's why we added the waiver option where they could waive, saying, you know, I do not have to comply to that part of the ordinance because that would remove 70% of my display area.
And who's going to implement that waiver? Who's going to go out and audit?
That would be the crime prevention specialist for the police department would evaluate those. Ultimately, in the ordinance as written, is the chief is the final or his designee.
Okay. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Yeah, I was going to comment earlier. Again, part of the reason for the rules is we'd like to reduce the calls for service to the stores, but almost equally importantly, we'd like to increase the chances of successfully prosecuting the bad guys. And that's why some of the elements of the ordinance you'll see with regard to the cameras and the maintenance of the records, the height markers on the stores, we want to make it easier to identify who those people are so that we can have a better chance of apprehending them and prosecuting them. So I think from a public safety standpoint, we're trying to manage our resources better, hopefully with a reduction in calls for service, but also an increase in the number of successful prosecutions for these types of crimes. The other thing, again, that we still have to remember is that, you know, a beer run isn't necessarily a victimless crime because there can be consequences or layered effects of that activity, as Councilmember Summers notes. And we all see the incidents, particularly the firefighters, of the motor vehicle accidents involving alcohol. And so there's multiple layers of public purpose to address these types of criminal activities.
But I agree with that. I think we need to be real careful to jump to conclusion unless we have data that indicates that a certain amount of fatal DUIs follow a beer run. I don't know what that information is. Maybe we have that data, maybe we don't have that data. I'm not discounting that happens. It probably does happen. Chief?
Yes, sir. Mr. Mayor and Council, my former employer had the same issue at Phoenix, and they decided to quit taking calls for service on thefts of alcohol from convenience stores, thefts of gas from convenience stores, and those did lead to other problems. You know, you end up, if you will, free rein because the police don't respond. And so what we're trying to do here we think is noble by trying to still respond to the calls for service, protect the population from these crimes that lead to other things, whether they're motor vehicle collisions or congregation blight. The beer goes back to a party somewhere that turns into violence. I mean, all these things are, there's a nexus for a lot of them. So if we can figure out a way to not respond with our limited resources, you know, we're down 12% with staffing in the police department, and we're trying to come up with an option to not only still respond to calls, but try to limit those calls for service. We can do the security plan thing. There may be something to be said for that. Your idea of treating it like an alarm once you've had X number of calls, but maybe they just quit calling us, I don't know. But I think we all know, and we have the data here that we can supply if requested, to show where those calls for service are. We know what those calls for service come from. I can tell you that I was just looking at CompStat numbers in the Central District, and seven of my top calls for service locations in Central out of the CompStat dump from last quarter or last 30-day period came from convenience stores. So we can work with those retailers and do that, but we're just looking for the guidance of the council how you'd like us to proceed.
Yeah. Councilmember Fender.
Thanks. Just my little part to weigh in. I think it's really interesting what the mayor suggested, because I think we have a macro problem. We're looking at convenience stores. We have major big box retailers that generate tremendous amount of calls on shoplifting. On the fire side, we have business model, emergency medical responses for assisted daycare or, you know, large organizations that build in responses by public safety personnel for putting them on bed or some of the minor. So we do have a kind of a major approach, and I think one of the ideas that Mayor Floats has, you know, been on my mind for a couple of years since we've been here. So I appreciate more of a macro look at it, but I can honestly say, as a person that doesn't appreciate a lot of further government regulation, having sat in on the Public Safety Committee's deliberations on this, I've seen a very reasonable approach to trying to address the problem with some opportunities for working with individual business owners. So I've been able to, you know, find some comfort that this might be a good way to go. But, you know, I'm still open-minded to see how the conversation goes.
Councilmember Higgins?
When you listen to the presentation more than once and hear all the other comments, it is very interesting that we are taking a big model and rules to affect everybody, even though you might have convenience stores that have never had a call for service, yet we're still going to require them to go through the steps of meeting the ordinance. So, I mean, I really like the idea of having something that really addresses your, like you say, your top 10 or your, you know, I'm sure there's the top 20 that really count maybe for all of them, as opposed to something that would affect everybody across the board. And if that, it sounds like that's something we had originally and then are going back, you know, I'm willing to look at it. Thanks.
Any other questions for police department? Okay. As I said before, we normally don't take input or testimony during study session. This is an important enough issue, though. I'd like to hear from some of the so-called stakeholders. We have Tim McCade and Trish Hunt. He's still here. Chief, you want to make way and let them talk a little bit? And if you could give your, once again, for the record, your name and address, and then just talk briefly about why you're here, who you represent, and give us some input. And, you know, normally it's 3 minutes, but we'll give you a little bit of leeway on that, see how it goes, okay?
We will be as brief as possible. For the record, my name is Trish Hart, and this is Tim McCabe. We are here on behalf of the Arizona Food Marketing Alliance. The Arizona Food Marketing Alliance is a trade association that represents retail, grocers, and convenience stores and food suppliers throughout the state. And this is an issue that we have been working very closely with the city staff on, and we greatly appreciate the amount of time and effort that the city staff has put forth on this and the amount of time that they have taken to listen to our concerns. And basically where we're at right now is this went through the Public Safety Subcommittee. There was a draft that they presented at the last Public Safety Subcommittee, which was a draft of, I believe, of March 29th, 2010. We told the city staff that we would take that draft to our members. We have done that. We went through a thorough review of that draft. We provided input to the city staff on the concerns on that draft. I have copies of the memo that we presented to the city staff on that, and I'll be happy
I'm
to.
Sorry, is that the one that we have in our?
You should have it. It came via email, but we brought extra copies just in case. Okay. You didn't have it. So those were our concerns. I wanted to, before we start, before we kind of just give an overview, I wanted to go and just briefly talk to you about, Mary, you had the question about our concern with the security plan. This, in all fairness to Chief Mesa, he wasn't there during the process of the first meeting that we had, and basically the first meeting that we had, it was basically called the security plan draft, and there was the ordinance included a security plan and it included a whole host of other things. We as the retailers had a problem with the entire ordinance, and basically what happened after that meeting is the security plan was totally taken out, and as of the last draft, I believe on 429, the security plan had been taken out, and so now today the proposal was to bring it back in a limited occurrence. So our concern was not with having the security plan to just address a few people. Basically, our opposition was, in the very beginning, the security plan was part of an overall ordinance. And I'm going to turn it over to Tim to give you just some of a brief overview of where we're at on the current draft.
My name is Tim McCabe, and I'm the president of the Arizona Food Marketing Alliance. And our organization represents all food retailers in the state of Arizona, whether it's a chain convenience store, independent convenience store, a large grocery store. We represent the food retailers throughout the entire state. I will say in this specific situation, we're talking about convenience stores. We're talking about convenience stores in Mesa, both independent and chain, that we are also very, very concerned about crime. We're very concerned about the safety of our employees and our customers. And we spend a lot of time and a lot of resources. Each retailer will have a different plan, basically, depending on their specific situation and their specific store. But the big issue for us is there's these criminals on the street, and it's not the same ones that are doing it in Mesa are jumping to Tempe. They're doing it to Phoenix. And we have to track these type of criminals. And our goal, as just stated, the same as Councilman Kavanaugh, is we're trying to get these criminals off the street. There's groups of these. It is gang related in some situations, but there's groups of these that we try to get off the street, and sometimes it's through a process of sharing information with Tempe, Glendale, Mesa, and whatever to get these criminals off the street, and that is our number one goal. In many cases, we already have invested heavily in crime prevention. I will say, though, we did start, as Trish had mentioned.
Hold on a second.
Can you describe that? Because that's the second time you referenced that you've spent resources in crime prevention. Can you describe your program that you use to work with your food retailers? And because we're obviously having a problem with some, and they may not be your members or not.
Well, let's ask.
I just want to know what your program is.
Convenience stores are members of your organization. Do you have an estimate of that?
Probably. Roughly, I'd say about 75%.
Okay, so 3 out of 4. So you have that 25-30% that are sort of outside the system then.
Right, but
okay.
even though they aren't members, we still work
right,
on issues.
I understand
they attend.
They're not
all
getting
our
your newsletter every month. They're
right.
not. They're still outside the.
Exactly, system. Right.
Okay.
Could you describe your crime prevention programs that you're working with your neighbors? Because you referenced twice saying that you're spending resources helping.
Well, it's. I think.
In, so it, what are you doing specifically?
I think it does. It depends on the individual retailer. There are things that I think go on. It varies. Surveillance cameras, for an example, certain kind of lighting, height markers on the door, are just a few to name that, you know, of what
That's industry practice. What is your organization doing? Because I would really love to see a private sector response to being able to tackle this problem so we don't have these top 10 convenience stores sucking up 50% of the calls to convenience stores. So you described a few standard industry practices. What is your organization doing to push this into the industry?
Councilman Richens, I think to answer that question, basically when Tim talks about what we're doing, I think he's referencing what our members are doing, and
right.
All of our members are, a lot of them already have security cameras, a lot of them already have the height markers, a lot of them already have lighting. They are already doing those things that are going to be required in the ordinance. We do not, as on behalf of the Arizona Food Marketing Alliance, have a security plan. Most of the stores, they already do a lot of these things already. They've already invested in security cameras. They've already invested in these things and are doing
those. So then why
is
this a problem?
Because there's a lot of the smaller independents that have not.
But there
they
are problems.
They may have a they may have cameras, but they may not be the high resolution that that the city is asking for in the ordinance. So basically what would happen is if you have a camera system, but it's not a, say it's not a DVR, say it runs on a VHS tape, you know, you would then be required to update your system to meet the requirements of the ordinance. And if you are a small independent operator and you have to go out and make changes to comply with this ordinance that costs anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000, maybe even $20,000.
My neighbor just went out to Costco and bought a four camera DVR system for about $600 that he put all over his house. So $5,000 to $10,000 is a load of crap. So well, I know these systems are a lot cheaper.
They are cheaper, but where the cost comes in is in the video storage because the requirement.
They have 30-day DVR. They have long-term DVR storage for very inexpensive. The technology has come a long way. So I'm sorry, I'm not buying. You're selling, I ain't buying $5,000 to $6,000 for a system that works like this. You can go down to Costco and get them cheap. I've seen them. Now, I'm not trying to do a commercial for Costco, but don't come in here and say this when we want to. I'm glad you've been engaged in solving this problem, but I'm getting even more dug in about supporting this and not even. Let's just do it. I'm just. Sorry, I'm just a little
frustrated. Okay, go on.
Okay.
And I will follow up and say this. I guess I'm a little surprised that you don't at the association level have a formal security initiative or program. Did I hear you right?
All of the convenience stores have their own.
Yeah,
their
but I get that. And I understand that as an owner, whether I'm a chain or whatever, it behooves me to heighten my security because I would think that that's just good business to do that. So I get that. I'm still a little surprised that at the association level, because, I mean, here's the reality. And I don't know what other cities are going through. If you guys and your members step up and do a lot of these things, we're not having this discussion. And I would prefer not to have this discussion. You know, this goes against most everything that I've been preaching ad nauseum, which is facilitate, don't regulate. And so I'm really torn in this whole issue because on one hand, you know, I don't think government, I think we regulate way too much and we go regulation first, whereas I would prefer to facilitate and help you. I have a little difficult of a problem when I want to help you and follow that line of reasoning. And then I hear that the industry really hasn't stepped up and has left it to their individual members. And maybe the disconnect is here. Maybe I'm asking too much of you, but you know I'm having a little bit of a disconnect there because in a sense it's sort of like if we can't get you to do that, which I would love for you to do that, then who else is left to do it? And I think that's a bad approach to leave it up to government to regulate because it's just not a good approach. I'd much rather prefer the industry and the own individual owners and the industry associations do it on their own. And that's why I'm torn on this. What you have are individual members and non-members, and whether you like it or not, that 25% that is not a member of your organization is tainting your organization if they're not following these procedures. In many ways, it's creating an attractive nuisance in a legal term. They are the honey that the bees are coming to. And, you know, the problem is that I know it's an issue for individual store owners, but it's also a huge issue for us as a community. And I'd rather work together, and I guess I'm not comfortable with the level of working together that I'm hearing.
Let me, Mr. Mayor, let me address that a little bit. Is a trade association, we represent them in a lot of different ways other than security plans, whether it's on the federal level, the state level, the legislative level, the city level, the county level. We represent them on a lot of things, and we try to bring things together with members and non-members. We try to bring the whole industry together, although we have a very diverse base of membership of wit or of and retailers in this state. Whether you're a small little independent store, even a store that just sells WIC products and whatever, it's very diverse, so it's very hard to get everybody, you know, from an umbrella standpoint and a direction standpoint, yes, but to get everybody on one specific thing is sometimes a challenge for us, because whether you do business in Douglas, Arizona, Mesa, Arizona, or Phoenix, Arizona, it's difficult to do that. What we try to do is take the general issues, and we as an organization try to bring everybody together to solve those specific issues. And that's what we are trying to do here, is try to bring as much, whether they're members or non-members, together to try to address that issue.
Do you have a committee or a program where members or non-members can utilize your buying power to install electronic security systems?
No, we don't. We have a committee. Well, you have a safety committee.
To me, if I'm an association, that's one of the greatest services I can get. And that way, even the individual store owner, granted that the chains aren't going to go there, but it would seem like you have resources as a group that individual store owners don't have. And it would seem like that would be something that would be very simple, so they don't even have to go down to Costco, as
right.
A council member Richin says. You say, listen, if you're going to meet these standards for security, here's a resource we offer. You can come through us. We have subcontractors who are giving us this deal. We have this type of discount that we've gone to, and it's a lot cheaper. And call up us, and we can come in and put in a security system in your store. And it's not the $6,000 or $7,000. Maybe it is the $700 or $800. It would seem to me that that's a service that an association, by its nature, could offer and should offer.
We offer a lot of different services for our members. It varies from workers' comp programs to all kinds of various programs. A buying service for security, no, we don't, but it's, yes, there are things. We are always contemplating anything that we can do to benefit both members and non-members alike. I mean, whether you're a member of our organization or not, we have the same, the same issues affected. It doesn't, whether there's people in this room today that want to speak that are not members of our association, and there are people that are members of our association. But one of the things that
we could go on all morning, so let's go ahead and we'll finish up here and we will say this and we
agree with what you've said, in all the things that Assistant Chief Mays was talking about as well, and we appreciate the partnership that we've had with the Phoenix or the Mesa Police Department. But really, it all came to life for us in about the last year, when Assistant Chief Mesa got involved and started sharing with us. And prior to that, we did not have a lot of, I would say, good communication. And when he started sharing, and we started having some stakeholder meetings, and then most recently, we were fortunate to have a meeting with Chief Milstead himself and some of our major stakeholders to talk about this issue and what we can do to solve it. And with that issue being that, no, we don't believe the ordinance is necessary, but yes, we do know if there's 10 stores, 12 stores, or whatever, the focus is on those and what can we do to make that situation better. And most importantly, we wanted to share some of the things that we do with some of our members right now of tracking criminals and some of the crime prevention that we do try to implement in the stores. So I guess basically what we're asking is that, no, we don't think it's right to implement something against all the stores. And there are, in Mesa is very diverse. Some of the older stores that go back into the 60s were built here and make it very difficult for the front end. And I know that part of that is in the ordinance. But what we want to focus on and what our goal is we want to continue. We want to work with the chief and his team to focus on these 10 or 12 or whatever these stores are and have individual plans against these stores to make the results in these stores be better, without having to take an ordinance, of which many of our members think it's not, because nets on beer from 2 to 6 aren't going to stop somebody that wants to walk in there at 5 at night. And we don't feel, or we feel maybe this is a Band-Aid approach. We don't feel that this is the answer. The answer is focusing on where the problem is and working with your current chief and his staff and our key stakeholders to address that.
So if I'm hearing you, if I could rephrase, maybe what I think I heard is you're asking for the opportunity to come up with a solution that you believe would address our needs and our issues before implementing an ordinance.
Yes, sir. That is correct. And through the conversations that we have had with the city staff, I think we've come We've learned a lot in the last year from them, and I think they've learned a lot from us as well. And I think that we would hope that we could continue this dialogue and find out, okay, what exactly is it that we can do to target those top 10 stores or those top 20 stores and make and actually fix the problem rather than just going in and putting in additional regulation that's going to be punitive for everybody when we just have the problem with a
now,
small amount of the stores.
And I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, if there was a time frame on that, that we said within this next thing you're going to do this, 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 and this, that we would not withdraw this, but we'd table it. Is that something you could live with and say, listen, if we get to the end of X months or whatever, and you've shown that your efforts and the joint efforts have not really helped, you haven't gotten voluntary compliance, you haven't gotten that, then you'd move on, you'd accept the fact that we might need to move on with an ordinance?
Yes.
That's a loaded question, I know.
Yeah, you're right. It's a loaded question. We've continued to work. There are still certain elements of the ordinance that are concerned. I think to summarize it, there's two things. One is the cost, whether it's a Costco piece of equipment or not. There's several other elements of this that generate costs. The security light at the dumpster, that's a cost. There's several elements that generate costs for this. So one of them is costs, and along with costs is fines. I mean, how does a fine that $500? So if they don't, something happens the next day, is it $500 a day?
Well, if you could fix the problems, the ordinance would become a moot point if we could come up with some voluntary
exactly.
compliance.
Well,
and that's exactly what we're trying to do. And we have been working with the city staff. We've had some really great conversations okay. with the new chief, and we feel very confident that we can. We can work together on this issue.
I think Councilman Richens has one more question or comment.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's this pesky thing that the government has to do. I think it's something called equal protection under the law. And I don't know how we apply something other than voluntarily to just a few stores. And it sounds like we reached out to some of those stores, and they really didn't want to work with us. They didn't really want to change anything because they were worried about the guy across the street not having the same deal as they do. And so I think we've tried that approach a little bit. But I don't see how we just do apply this to just a few and provide equal protection to all stores and apply the law to all stores legally.
Well, that's an easy standard. Those stores that have crime, that's the defining thing. I mean, I think that's
right. But it sounds like we've done that and that they resisted that because they didn't want to make changes that didn't affect their neighbors. So.
I'm not sure we've done that with an association.
I'm not done. So
okay, go ahead.
The last thing that is. What do we do about new stores that come on that become a problem?
Well, okay. Now, the other thing I would support is that we implement these guidelines into any new store, any design, and it becomes part of the design. Now, I think that's a fair thing. Anyone who comes online.
And we would not have
similar
any problems
Tempe,
with
right?
that. And that's the way the city of Tempe does it. They do it during the design review process, and we would not.
Or even a reuse. I mean, if you have someone
who
comes in for a new license or reuse, I would have no problem. Asking or requiring that right. they implement those the standards that we have.
And we would support that because if we did this during the design review process or if you were going to remodel a store and you were going to be making changes.
Because then someone can make a decision. If there's an independent.
They
can make a decision. If they don't want to spend the money, then they decide not to go in the business. I mean, it's that simple. If they don't want to create an environment that is crime safe. Boy, that didn't sound right, did it? That is anti-crime by following these standards, they can make the decision not to go in the business. I mean, I have no problem with that.
And I think that that's probably what the whole crux of this issue is the fact that what we're doing is by implementing this ordinance, we're saying, okay, you've been in business for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. Now we're going to change
okay.
the...
Councilman Kavanaugh, and then we got to move on.
Yeah, obviously I agree that subtype principles should be incorporated in the design process. That's what our committee recommended earlier this year and as part of our zoning code update, but that only applies to new stores. And taking the approach simply that Tempe did in 1987 doesn't cut it today in terms of the public resources that are expended in this field. And I guess I'm pretty frustrated at this point because we've been in this discussion for 13 months, and a classic effective way of lobbying is to delay, 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 and keep coming up with new objections every time we have a new plan. And that's what I've seen through every step of this process. And I think the committee and the police department is working very hard
to find a blend of a regulatory structure that will work, that will serve public safety needs. And that has, we have to remember, that's the primary purpose here is public health, safety, and welfare. And we have crafted a proposal here that meets almost every objection you have for individual members for them to request a waiver. You may not like some of the overall requirements, but most of the newer stores meet those requirements. We built in the waiver provision to deal with the very issues that you're using to object to the ordinance. And so my feeling is that we should move ahead with this ordinance. There may be some additional changes that the police department will recommend to the city attorney before we introduce it. But I certainly don't want to table this after 13 months of constantly changing our approach in response to industry concerns. And then here we are again. I think we've crafted a proposal that has the safety valve for the small businesses that exist. We have tried working with the industry, particularly, again, some of the big chains, and you know who it is that is resistant to the change. And we've tried that discussion process. I had a very stormy conversation with the vice president of that particular chain a couple months ago, the same night he got a call from one of his stores where there was a double fatality. And that store didn't have security plans in place that might have prevented it. But, you know, it was a dollars and cents issue to that person. You know, well, we can't afford to do this. Well, our community can't afford to continue devoting the public resources in an area where crime prevention can make a safer environment for the workplace, can create hopefully a more successful business environment for the business owners and for our officers. And I think that we have an approach here that provides enough flexibility to take advantage of the legitimate concerns of the small business owners. They raise some very excellent points that, frankly, I didn't consider a year ago, and I think we have a better product at this point. So my hope is that we would move ahead with this process.
And just an FYI, Amazon has a four-camera color system for 250 gigabytes for $250.
Thank you, Councilman
B&H Richard. Photo has one for $500.
All right.
Get my point.
Let me address one thing, and I appreciate all of your input. We have worked with the police department, and I will say, as all of you know, there has been a change in the police department recently, and I can tell you from a business community standpoint, we are very it's very refreshing, and in the conversations we've had with Chief Milstead and understanding what the issues are and how we need to go about solving it, my role in an association is quite simply is I can't speak about what's happened in the past with these, but is to get the decision makers that make decisions that truly have something at stake to get the problem resolved, whether it's for safety issues or for their customers, their employees, to get the right people together to solve a problem and solve a problem in those stores. And that's what we've done, and especially most recently with Chief Milstead, and that's what we want to continue to do is work with the police department.
I would love that. I think one of the issues is defining what the problem is, because you have two problems. And I think in many ways we're talking about two separate items. I think this body is talking about the problem of crime and disproportionate amount of crime in convenience stores. And what I've heard is the problem is the ordinance. You know, I feel much more comfortable if the association and the members would focus their efforts on solving the crime problem and doing those things that they need. Let the ordinance will take care of itself. I get it that you have issues and people will always have issues with the ordinance. But I think that what it seems like is, as with most associations, the emphasis has been on the ordinance as the problem rather than the crime as the problem and getting your members and non-members in line. Because if you have one or two bad apples who are unwilling to cooperate, you got a problem. Because we're going to react to that issue. And maybe it's the proverbial killing the mosquito with the elephant gun, but if we got one bad actor who's really tainting the pool, that's going to happen. And so I'd leave you with that.
And that we appreciate that.
And we have been having those conversations with our members.
Well, and I think your members need to understand that if they have one or two that are unwilling to go on to Amazon.com and for $2.99 this week only, get a six-color ultra-high definition X-ray driven.
You can get an eight-camera system.
Eight-camera.
500 gigabytes of storage for $1,500. Full Ooh. Color with infrared.
The
with
camera infrared. Is just and night one of, vision. It's just one of the
and
costs.
And night vision. No, I know.
Night vision and smell, all that. And
I can tell you, we have some large retailers of our organization that could probably beat that deal if we wanted to. But
I'd like to make a motion to move this forward.
Well, we got a couple other. I'd like to hear. They've been so kind to sit around and a couple of the convenience stores. If you could make both of you could come up here and make it very very short, and we'll keep our questions short. But Mr. Singh, Sodai, and Mr. Michael, and I'm sorry, Rahal, come on up and have a seat too. And if you guys could just take a couple minutes and let us know what your feelings are and your input is, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. And my name is Rana Singh Sodhi, and we have an independent family operated. Gas station and store, and we are part of we have a 40 store organization, independent owner. We get together every month and talk to the vendor, and I've been running the business in Mesa since 2000, the gas station and convenience store, and we have a restaurant. And I think whatever the audience require, most of her independent store, I think, do have those requirements. But only part I believe it, we all independent believe it, is our family work there. Our, wives, daughter, brother, sister, all we work there in the store. And we concern our security, what we taking care also. But I don't like the idea, if something happened, the audience, we can penalize, Like, we have all the store have a security system, but my recording is only for 1 week. I don't think any convenience store doesn't have a surveillance camera. Most of them already had a surveillance camera. But the audience requiring 30-day requirement, which one, we need to spend another money. And this is the time of everybody know who we're going with all the lack of, our economy, how we suffering. And we know how we've been through, and our sale dropped some of the store 30 to 40% since this thing politically happening in our state. And I request to council, please, do make all regulation. I heard all the conversation. We can work with the police department and solve this problem. Don't penalize the business. That's going to hurt everybody. And people thinking to, I think the government and the city should support to bring the business. I like the, mayor bringing those team to practice here. I always watch those things. It's nice to bring the business to the city, not kick them out to penalize those things. It's make them to all the businessmen comfortable working with the city. When you hammer those and penalize things, and people aren't comfortable. I just request, we can work everything with the police department, the previous conversation have it, and we can solve the problem. Like one of my store, some of my store, my family run 3 gas stations in East Mesa. I don't think we make a 5 call a year on either store. And why we penalize those things? This is really bothering us, So please, requesting. We don't need those audience. We can work with the city, I see the only 10 store making half of the call. We can work with those store and solve this problem.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Rahal.
Again, my name is Michael Rahal. Thanks for having the opportunity to be here. I run a liquor store at 8th Avenue in Alma School, and I've been there for 15 years. And I already do quite a few things that this ordinance requires, but by choice, not because the government is mandating that of me, okay? I am going to address specific points in the ordinance that I find troubling or objectionable to me. Many of the buildings that has already been brought up are very old, and the space is very limited. My store roughly is about 1,200 square feet. For me to have to remove the obstruction from the windows, whether it is advertisement or shelving, would basically make it very difficult for me to continue in business, because about 40% of my inventory that is on the shelf is in front of glass panels. And I understand police concerns that they would like to look in and see what's going on before they get in there, but space-wise, we cannot do it, many of us. If we all had 2,500 to 3,000 square feet of space and we can shift product around without causing loss of business, perhaps that would be agreeable, but we do not have that luxury, okay? The other point I would like to bring up is the issue of the fines. The fine, as mentioned here, is $250 to $500, but one thing was not mentioned, which is per day, because each day is considered a violation when the correction has not been made. I don't think that any of us or any of you gentlemen and ladies can afford to pay $250 to $500 a day until you're able to correct a problem, whatever the problem is. We are in difficult economic times. We have political issues with immigration status, not to mention other concerns. Our business, as this gentleman mentioned, is down anywhere from 40 to 50%. We can't necessarily come up with funds at the snap of fingers and say, okay, we want you to do this, and if you don't, we're going to, you know, slap you with a $500 fine per day. Suppose it takes one of us 5 days, 6 days to fix the problem. Where are we going to be able to get this money from if we can't even raise the funds to meet the ordinance requirements? So that is a very cruel and unusual punishment, as the proverb says here. You know, if you're going to institute any form of fines, it should be reasonable to the point where any of us can afford it. And many of you are in business for yourselves, and you know that. Please. Okay. Also, repairs. The ordinance requires that we, the retailers, repair such items as lighting, graffiti, and stuff like that. Well, we don't own the buildings. We rent. Most of us rent. In our leases, we are prohibited from doing anything to the landlord's property without their permission. If someone graffitis the back side of my store, I cannot go and paint over it because I don't know that the landlord will appreciate that or if I'm going to meet his color schemes. If a light stops working, I can't go out there and get a ladder, 20-foot ladder, and climb up there or hire someone to change it. So you're giving us 48 hours to repair items that are beyond our control. This is something that you have to address with.
So you don't have a problem with the repair. What you're saying is that you would like more flexibility and perhaps having the landlord, the building owner, be
correct,
be responsible or have a
indeed
dual responsibility with
indeed
these.
I mean, if you're going to work on this ordinance with the retailers, you also have to take into account the landlords, because it's their properties. So we cannot do anything without them getting involved and approve of our actions. So, you know, if your inspector goes out there and sees a broken light, the letter should not necessarily be addressed to me individually. It should also be copied to the landlord, okay, to the proprietor, so that he can take care of that within your 48-hour requirement. The annual registration fee is another situation. It says here that there's no annual registration fee, but if you go to page 5, under fees, item C, and page 8, under expiration, it shows that there will be a registration fee and perhaps a renewal fee. To me, that's a form of indirect taxation, and I don't think, again, we have to pay these things every year. The city is mandating it. Why should we have to pay for it? If you want me to comply with ordinance requirements, it's not my obligation to lay out another $100 or $150 every year to renew what you expect of me, correct? I mean, that's the fair thing to do.
Let's find it. Councilman Kavanaugh, you have a question?
And just a clarification on that. What we have in our packet is the draft that was presented to us at our committee meeting in May. This is an attachment to the minutes of our meeting, and as I recall, the committee agreed with eliminating the fee requirement. There is no fee requirement. That was what was proposed several
See,
months
look
ago.
Out, you've already but been we already, effective.
But we addressed okay. that and took that out. The other issue, of course, that is in there is that if there is a violation, there would be no fine imposed if the violation is corrected within 14 days. So it's not a situation where you have to fix it that day or the next day. At least.
Right, but the fine should not be addressed to me. Let's say I inform my landlord that the lighting fixture is not working to your specification and he doesn't fix it in 14 days. Do I get a bill from the city for $500 per day?
Yeah, having been a tenant, I can tell you that I've had landlords that if I tried to change a light, that would be a violation of my lease.
Oh, absolutely.
And I see what you're saying. No matter how much, and that's where you get a lot of landlord-tenant fights, is that you'll actually have issues that hurt the business that the landlord refuses to allow you to take care of yourself.
Correct.
Especially when it relates to painting and stuff like that. So I can see where you're coming from.
Right. There. So what I'm saying is the landlords have to be intimately involved in this,
yeah.
and any notices of violation and fines should be addressed to them because they own the property.
In addition, it's a joint type of thing.
Correct. Correct.
Dave?
I don't see the fines as like a huge revenue source for the city. Is this the possible funding for our grant program to help people be in compliance? I mean, if I'm going to fine somebody per day, I mean, I just assume, okay, here's your fine. Use this money to put your system in and be compliant with the ordinance. So, is this something we're trying to do to generate money for the general fund, or we're trying to do it to get people to be?
Wasn't it?
What's that?
It's a deterrent.
Wasn't it a deterrent? I don't think it was considered a revenue source.
Right. I mean, really, the whole principle is just to, we're not trying to gather money just to enrich the city or to pay for even the police service. I mean, it's something I guess we can look at. I don't know if Debbie had a, she's
But you see, the other thing is, at this juncture, there may not be a fee, but how do we know that 5 years down the line, all of a sudden now there is going to be a fee?
Well, you'll have to address that with that council at that time.
I mean, we know how cities
work. 5 years ago, we weren't having this discussion either, so.
No, but my point is nothing is constant, okay? Nothing remains the same. At this point, there is no fee proposed or renewal, but 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, there may be one, and what do we do then? Do we come back to you and say, well, you said there's not going to be a fee, but now.
Well, you'll come back to whoever's here and talk about that.
The other issue I wanted to bring up to your attention is what this gentleman mentioned about surveillance systems, okay? I have been in business, as I mentioned, for 15 years in one location, and I've progressed through different phases of surveillance systems as they modernized and became more update. Some of them still have the old system, which is the VHS. It works. It doesn't work to the best results possible, but it does function. If you need to upgrade it to a new commercial-grade system, not the one that you buy at Costco or Sam's or online, you are talking about $300, $400 per camera, okay? Those cameras that you're mentioning, Constant Money, are basically for home use primarily. They're not.
Their resolution is really good.
Well,
I've seen them.
Right, you're talking about the best system. And if you have a store that requires 10, 15 cameras and you want to buy the DVR unit that records with them, I spent $5,000 a year and a half ago to upgrade my system.
We all know you're in a. When you're talking commercial versus resident, I get it, there's a difference.
Right, so there's a substantial difference, and then also if you have to have them serviced, it's a
commercial
different thing. You can't install these things by yourself unless you're very handy. You have to get a contractor to do it, and your cost of labor is basically more than your cost of the product.
Yeah, we understand this may provide whether it's $500 or it's $5,000,
it's
still a burden.
Correct, correct. Also, the production of crime tapes cannot be done within 24 hours. Because none of us is expert enough to know how to operate these things beyond switching screens, if you will. So we have to call on a third party to come forward and duplicate it so that we can give it to the police department. I would say no less than a week. And that would be at an added cost to us as well because they're not going to come out for free.
And it shouldn't matter because you're on a 30-day loop. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, 30 days. To keep them for 30 days, for me, it's not a problem having, because I own a digital system, but for someone that does not, 30 days is a problem, like the VH system, because usually they use the same tapes to re-record.
Right.
So they have five, six tapes. They record you know, one day, and they keep it for a week or two, and then
was the purpose of the 24 hours police so we could get in, get information, so we could catch people
quickly.
Yeah.
Okay. Now they're welcome to come and look. They're welcome to come and,
yeah,
and
police
review.
Come in and review it.
Gotcha. You know, and see the gentleman or the person who has committed the crime, and see if they recognize him. That's not an issue. You know.
Is there any other major issue? Because you know we're basically
yes,
out of time.
I'm almost down to the last ones
okay.
here. The beer door locks. Okay, that is a major issue because not all of us are open 24 hours a day. The Circle K's and the 7-Elevens and the QT's and what have you are, but most independent owners are not. Liquor store operators and what have you. We close by 2 o'clock from 2 to 6 or 8. There's nobody in the store. It's closed. So for me and others like me to have to spend money to mechanize the doors, that is not something that I would appreciate at all because I don't fall into this, you know,
gotcha.
Particular situation. And also, once you approve this ordinance, should you get to that point, the transition time should not be 190 days because we're talking about thousands of dollars worth of extra
right.
expense. It should be no less than 6 to 9 months so that we can raise the funds necessary to do that. And furthermore, please, even though the ordinance talks about stores that are 7,500 square feet or less, I don't see any difference between our operations and the drugstore operations like CVS and Walgreens, whether they have 10,000 square feet or not. They are also open the same length of hours as we are, and if you require us to do it, then they are bound by it because they sell liquor and beer and sundry items as well. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so very much for your input. Thank you. I get it that this is a big issue for a lot of people.
Thank you.
What kind of direction are you looking for, Mr. Brady?
Well, the city attorney office needs to get direction from council about what if the council wants to move forward with an ordinance so they can draft an ordinance to bring back to the council for consideration, and based upon, I guess, the work of the Public Safety Committee, which components of that, you know, what is the direction as far as what we're going to address in that ordinance going forward so they can draft a ordinance to bring back to the council. I mean, there's been a lot of work. I don't make it sound like we're starting from scratch.
Yeah.
A lot of work here. It does sound like there may be some various points that council may want to give direction on.
Thank you, Mayor. The ordinance, as it's written, with that caveat that you can always come in for a, what's the word? Security plan, should your store be tiny or have other issues. I think that kind of covers.
Security plan, what's the difference between a waiver? You do a waiver, do you have to implement a security plan?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Behind you, they're shaking yes. She's shaking no. That, my understanding was the waiver is the security plan. There is no, we're just opting out. We have to come. So with that as a line item on this ordinance, I think we're all those issues you guys brought up today, which are all very good, would be covered in a security plan for your independent
I got a
stores.
Rhetorical question.
So
if we have an ordinance that most people are complying with, chains and everything, and the small independents can come in for a waiver that allows them to do a security plan, I'm miffed as to why we need an ordinance.
If
it doesn't really apply to anybody.
But it does.
Or potentially.
Just to get people to, because they want to do the security plan without the ordinance.
Okay, but what I'm saying, though, is that we're arguing all over these little things, these specific points on an ordinance, that we admit a large number of stores are already complying with, especially if they're besides the one unnamed company that shall remain unnamed, but was already named.
JFK.
We've got these things. They're already complying, and the small independents can come in for a waiver and put in a security plan. So why are we quibbling over details?
Mayor and Council, a lot of them are complying to some of the elements in the ordinance, not all of them.
Okay, so they get a waiver. That means they don't have to comply with the ordinance.
The biggest one that probably is not in compliance on all levels is the locking of the beer on off sales, the netting of the beer. I know a lot of them are already complying with a lot of the ordinance, but not every single element of the ordinance. So that's why we're asking for the ordinance.
Okay,
so that
but if they can get a waiver, I mean, we talked to a gentleman, a lot of these older stores, there's no way that they can continue in business without having product in the front window. They can get a waiver away from that with a security plan, then what's the use of the ordinance?
Mayor Smith, one of the reasons that we want
and thought that it was a wonderful idea to do the security plans is because it gives the police department more flexibility to assist those smaller stores because of the fact that there may be certain things, for instance, what they were talking about with their store, the store layout may not allow them to, you know, move things around the way we would normally want in the ordinance. But the security plan gives us the flexibility to work with that store owner or manager and come up with a plan that does work for them and still keeps the calls.
What you're saying is the ordinance basically pulls them into the system. It's not a voluntary. They're either going to comply with the ordinance or they have to apply, and that gives the police department the ability to go in there and get into that store and create a security plan. Is
right.
It? So that's what you're saying.
Yes.
The ordinance accomplishes.
Yes, it gives more flexibility. Okay. And because of the smaller stores, some of them, you know, like they said, they can't comply. But again, it gives us that flexibility to truly work with them. And many of those do work with us.
Well, it doesn't give you the flexibility with all due respect. It requires you to work with them.
Right.
If they're applying for a waiver, we've got to go in there and figure out whether they're going to get a waiver or not. And if they get a waiver, they've got to come up with a security plan.
Right.
Which means we have to be involved.
Right. And part of that security plan, we may look at something and say, you know, that really, this part of the ordinance maybe really doesn't apply to your building. We have something that would work better and maybe even cheaper. So we see it as a positive thing for them and us.
Okay.
I would recommend that we move ahead with the ordinance that came out of the subcommittee as long as we have that caveat that you can go for the security plan and move ahead and see what happens.
Okay, so we sort of had a motion that we move ahead with this process. I would take that maybe as a second because
okay.
I'll give.
I'm sorry.
Okay. You know, I'm torn. I got a real issue. I got a real problem that we got 10 stores that represent half our problem and we're coming up with an ordinance that applies to everybody. I got a real hard time getting over that. And I got to admit, I have not been part of the detail. I certainly have not been as involved as the Public Safety Committee. I'm just really conflicted with why we're having a regulation that applies citywide. And the whole equal protection, you know, passing a bad law doesn't give everyone equal protection. I mean, that's an easy one to get over. Those who have problems are those we're going to deal with. And that's non-discriminatory. That if you have a crime problem, you're going to be involved in the system. I'm just not been satisfied that we've truly addressed the real problems. We got a small number of stores that create a large number of the problems, and I'm not understanding how a citywide ordinance that blankets everybody, including those stores that, like Mr. Sunday, hasn't had 5 calls a year, and now is subject to this huge ordinance. I'm really conflicted with that. I 100% agree with the fact we have a problem, we have an issue. I 100% agree with the fact that we need to somehow allocate resources. I'm just having a hard time getting over that hump as to why we need to cast this wide net for something that seems to be very well defined, and whether it's one company or whether it's 10 stores, we seem to have a handle on where the issues are.
So, Mayor.
Mr. Mayor.
Well, can I just quickly, so is what you're suggesting we could come up with an ordinance that says after so many calls or whatever, then you're subject to it?
Yeah, I get it that people are going to quit calling, and that's why I don't have the answer. And that's why I'm conflicted, because I do believe that if you have that kind of line in the sand, there you're going to go to 4 calls and then they're going to quit calling on beer runs. I get that. I think that's true.
Mayor, can I let Commander Kirkham talk about a little of the historic parts of this, what happened 2 years ago under Chief Gascon and how we got to where we are today, to maybe help you with some of those answers?
If you can help me, I'd love it.
Very quickly, I can summarize it, Mr. Mayor and Council. In 2007, we did a crime reduction project using some Six Sigma methodology that Chief Gascon wanted to try to bring to the city. When we started looking at our numbers and peeling the onion, we saw that theft was a very big Part 1 crime. They put up a lot of numbers. And then we just continued to peel that to kind of figure out where our numbers were being generated. Convenience stores were a high frequency generator there for us. So, and we kept looking at that, and we identified a particular area, and it was Beer Runs, and it was a particular store that I won't name here. And we did. We've had meetings with them. We started in I think early 2008 with meeting with them, and they gave us a PowerPoint presentation and said, "We understand this is a problem. We know this." And so we were trying to do the cooperative route, just like you guys are mentioning there, that you would like to see us do that, address the problem areas, because that's where we'll see our biggest gains. I went back to Chief Gascon and said, you know, they're willing to work with us, and I really think this is going to be a successful project. 6 months later, the numbers went up. And then he brought them in and said, these numbers
were not having... Well, what have they done in that six... Have they done anything in the 6 months?
They tried some things. We had our crime prevention folks go out and do the SEPTED evaluations of the stores to say, you know, this is what you could be doing better. They didn't implement everything that we had asked. We saw that it was beer
runs. What did they leave out?
Patty could probably answer those better.
A lot of the things that we suggested, they would say, well, corporate said, no, we cannot do that. We asked them to do some signage.
Well, this
signage.
Is important. A lot of the things or a few of the things? Because if locking the beer counter, but the beer cabinets or fridges or whatever, say, gets rid of 80% of our crime, and with CompStat and everything, you know, I guess what I'm getting at is that your information system really focuses in on specific areas, specific actions, and that's how you allocate your resources, which is the beauty of CompStat. And the way that our police department allocates resources, I'm wondering if we've gone far enough to truly come up with something that identifies that specific issue. Because if you tell me that they refused to lock their beer cabinets and that still created 80% of the crime, well, why are we then, once again, coming up with an overall thing when we've identified? If we don't have that information or haven't identified, then it's a different story. And I guess that's why I'm having a problem getting over it. I understand the lack of complete and full cooperation. And without a little hammer sitting out there, some people are just going to weigh this as a cost of business. And as Councilmember Kavanaugh said, they'll have meeting after meeting and delay after delay, and they'll delay implementing whatever because it's cheaper for them to call us with every beer run than it is for them to install this stuff or to change corporate policy. I absolutely agree with that. My question is, I'm still not getting it that we have not focused into that one or two particular activities that we could go in and implement through ordinance that is pretty tough because we know this is what causes the problem, and if you don't do it, here are the consequences, and it's much easier to comply with the ordinance than it is to ignore us, and it will apply to those people who are creating the problems and not apply to those people who are not. So I'm still not getting the feel that we're there.
Mr. Mayor and Council, if the direction of the Council is for us to go back and try to work with these for another period of time and see if we can get voluntary compliance, we'll do exactly that. If you want more specifics about things that were not identified, then I can give you the actual pieces of the puzzle that weren't answered and not these broad overviews. So,
Well, I'm one person, and I think you've heard from more than one that they feel a little bit differently on this issue. So. You know, I'm just voicing my personal opinion, and the rest of the council may feel differently on this. So, Councilmember Cass, so maybe we'll move ahead and. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I apologize. I cut you off, Chief.
Go ahead.
For instance, we asked that they net the beer at night from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. because that's when we, because of our CompStat process, we can narrow it down and know exactly what days and what times that those shoplifts are occurring. And we recognize the fact that was a lot of the times that they were taking the floor displays after the 2 a.m. So we asked them to net that, and they absolutely refused to do that. They said no.
I mean, I would have no problem if we had an ordinance that said if you don't net it after 2 a.m., there's a pretty hefty fine.
And
if we come in and it's not there, and that I think that might get their attention. I mean, if we've identified that as a specific issue, does our ordinance, other than saying you must do this, you know, I would like to say if you don't do this particular thing, it's much more than a $200 or $500 fine, because that's a simple thing to do that if they don't do it, we know causes a huge amount of crime and recurring crime, which has, as we said, a ripple effect. You know, that's...
If you can't buy beer after 2, you have to steal it. That's the only way to get beer after 2. So,
yeah.
And they told us actually in our last meeting that netting actually was a problem. It's too cumbersome. So... what sounds, and again, I'm not a retailer, but what sounds simple for us seems to be complicated for them.
Well, I think it's, you know, and I don't disagree that it's complicated. It's also complicated for us to pull cops off the street at 3 in the morning on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and it's also complicated for us to follow up because somebody did a beer run at 3 in the morning and ended up getting drunk and ended up getting in an accident. That's a little bit complicated, too. So
yes,
I've got no sympathy for those retailers who don't want to do something that seems reasonable and that takes effort rather than mass investment in capital, as I'm understanding.
Yes.
To me, there's a direct connection there. And I would feel comfortable if we could tailor an ordinance that hits those specific things, because I think the response is, you know what, there's no downside for us except for going to another meeting. Sure, we won't do it. I got no sympathy for someone like that.
Can we see what else Patty has?
I'm sorry, what?
Can we see what else Patty has?
Yeah, go ahead.
As far as the work and work in that region.
Well, and Mayor Smith and council members, I believe that the second part of the security plan will address exactly what you're saying, because maybe we have some stores that are, you know, once they do comply with the ordinance and they still have the beer runs or, you know, high calls for service, then the other part of that security plan says that then we can go in and also have them comply with the security plan, because some of the parts of the ordinance we did have to take out. For instance, when they were talking about having two clerks at night, there are certain stores that really do need that. And security, even as far as having security. So the security plan itself would allow us to implement that. But the ordinance itself is kind of the blanket in order to be able to use those security plans. And then we can target those top 10 stores, bring them
into
place.
Oh. I just wondered if she could do that.
No, please
update.
Do. I cut you off. I apologize.
We did start at that. It's been a couple years, and we did try to do the voluntary compliance, and that was really what we thought we would have some success with. The numbers just haven't come down like we had expected, so we started looking at best practices, what other cities are doing, some things that might be more effective than what we were doing. So we did at one point meet with the folks over at the liquor board to see, because it is alcohol primarily, and is there something that we can do using some of their strategies, and that was not something that worked for us either. So this has been a long road for us, and certainly we would love to have the voluntary compliance. It's just nothing that we've done so far has really been effective.
Yeah, you've asked for cooperation, and you just haven't gotten it to the degree that you feel is reasonable. And so what you're saying is that, Mayor, we need an ordinance because we need a hammer.
Yes, okay? Sir.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I support Councilmember Higgins' suggestion of moving this forward. I do think that there were some good points that were brought up in the comments and discussions today, as well as the written information provided to us. I think if we move forward with a draft ordinance, that there are some good suggestions from the corporate owner community in terms of registration and where things have to go. And so I would hope, Ms. Pinner, you would look at what they recommended. I think Jeff Welker was representing one of the chains that had some suggestions that make more sense if it's corporate ownership of many stores, just in terms of the paperwork that has to occur. I think there should be a transition period that we look at, and I don't think that 6 months is unreasonable. I would like it to be a shorter period of time, but 6 months is something that I would hope the rest of the council might look on favorably. I think we need to make sure that people understand that we did take out the issue of the registration fee, and that just, I think, may have been confusing just in looking at the materials that we had. There, I think some of the comments about maintaining the video for 30 days may be, I think, are well taken, and one suggestion that we had was maintaining it for 15 days, if that would meet the police department needs to be able to get that information. And again, I think that's a reasonable suggestion, as long as it meets our needs to obtain the evidence to help convict the bad guys. But with those comments, I would hope at least we would move ahead to have your office look at it to do a draft ordinance, and obviously come back for the council to look at, because I would suspect that, again, there's going to be more issues that will be brought to us. But this at least helps us have a document that we can work with. We can all work from the same document, and then maybe we can see what are the remaining issues that may be dividing people, or will perhaps the security plan option, you know, address most of it. I think from most of the comments I've heard all along is
having the flexibility of that security plan addresses almost all the vast majority of issues that we have.
And let's go ahead.
And just and the other issue that you didn't bring up, Councilmember Cow, is the owner of the building thing that you had issue.
Correct, yeah.
I don't know how to put that in there.
I think that's a valid point because you do have a lot of people who don't have the ability to comply because their leases preclude. And I've been in that situation.
Maybe. Yeah, that would be very reasonable to provide.
Well, let's call the question because, and I would say before we vote, Mr. McCabe and Ms. Hunt, I think as we move forward, and I can sort of sense that the feeling is we're going to move forward with a draft, you have an opportunity to get really involved and figure out a way that you can really solve the problem we're talking about. Because I think what we're hearing here is you have some people that are not have not willingly stepped up, and that's why we're here today. We haven't gotten the kind of voluntary compliance. The problem hasn't been resolved, and therefore this is almost like an issue of last resort. But you have also have an opportunity, as we've gotten some input today, to really work on maybe some changes, some tweaks, and some other things that will make this an ordinance that'll work. So, Vice Mayor, you got a comment here?
I've just been taking in all the comments and. It's fascinating where we know the problem has to do with the sale of alcohol and the smash and grab kind of thing or the run and take off, but we're concerned about ordinances and none of us really like to enact ordinances. Usually happens when we're forced backed up against the wall in a corner where we have to do something because other avenues have not worked. Interestingly enough, years ago when, and it wasn't local ordinance, but it was more widespread where they had to put tobacco, where you had to get the clerk to give you the tobacco because it was behind the counter, it wasn't available. I'm not suggesting that we have to go to that extreme with alcohol, but specifically the location of the alcohol, the accessibility of it, and during certain times where maybe it's limited after a certain period, but we need to have something in place. The ordinance as it stands, of what I've heard right now, I'm not prepared to support, but aspects of it I am, and if we massage it in such a way as to address a lot of the concerns, I can support to move forward, but we have the data. We know what the problem is, and we know what it's going to take to address it, and since we've tried to work with people and they haven't been willing, our back's against the wall, and we have to take some kind of a step to make it happen.
Okay. And I would echo my position is very similar to the mayor's. I'll
Vice Mayor.
Vice Mayor.
Cow. You are the mayor.
To Mayor Higgins.
Yeah. You're not allowed to quit.
I still have some issues. I agree with the Vice Mayor. I'm willing to have this move forward because I think there has been a long process that has gotten us to this point, but I think we need to address. I still have some problems with some specifics. I think we need to address having an ordinance that's not so broad-based but can really focus in on what the problem is. So we'll take a vote on this moving forward. And I'll support moving it forward, but with the caveat that it needs to be changed before I'd support going forward. So all in favor of moving this forward and instructing the city staff and city attorney to move ahead with a draft ordinance, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you so very much. I know this was long and arduous, but I appreciate everyone's willingness to chime in. And can we talk to you a little bit later? Let's throw that in. Make sure the stakeholders are involved with the follow-up of some of these programs or some of these issues and statements. That's it. Thanks very much. Okay. Mr. Brady, we're at 10 till 11.
If you want to get this update done, we've got to keep
Let's go ahead and let's take a five-minute break if
okay,
we can.
Gordon will.
And I mean 5 minutes this time. Let's get to 5 till 11.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. We wanted to give you a progress report on our public review period for our zoning code update. The dates that we just see on the screen right now, through the months of April and May, we presented individual topical surveys in this very room, workshops where we actually presented specific topics to the public, and we were soliciting comments during this time. In addition to that, we broadened our approach and we decided to go out into the neighborhoods and have individual public workshops in each of the council districts. We've done these so far through the month of June. You can see the dates on the calendar. We have two that are remaining on June 29th and June 30th. The one on June 29th is in Fire Station 202, which is at Stapley and 8th Street for Council District 4. And on June 30th, because there's not a community room available, we'll do it in the La Casita facility in the Dobson Ranch Homeowners Association, which is north of Guadalupe and west of Alma School. I wanted to give you an update on the board and hearing schedule and where the advisory committees are going to be on this. We've already presented this to the Economic Development Advisory Board. They told me they wanted it done yesterday, so I think they're on board. The Design Review Board, we began to get their recommendations from this on their June 2nd meeting. We'll go back on July 7th and get some more design-related criteria. We began our public comment period yesterday with the P&Z Board. We heard about a couple of things. We'll go back to them. We've told folks that our active public comment period we'd like to close by July 5th. Then that gives us a chance to react to that, prepare some comments on a staff basis, present those to the Planning and Zoning Board so they can give us final direction on a draft to present to you later this year. Hopefully they'll have a chance to take a look at that on August 18th and then prepare a recommendation for you. The couple of comments I wanted to make you aware of, just so that you're kind of getting a feel for some of the things that we've had. One comment was a gentleman would like to see us allow RVs parking in side yards that are longer than 30 feet. We've prepared a modification of that, basically allowing a little bit larger RV in properties that are a little bit larger. It's a proportional response. So it tends to be more of a bulk issue. On the smaller lots, the larger RVs just kind of have a tendency to overwhelm things. I'll have a diagram in a second that shows this.
Gordon, would that require the RV to be parked in accordance with your little drawing there, so it'll have to be parked back behind the front of the house?
Correct. It would be behind a fence. It'd have to be screened from.
That'd be screened. Okay, so behind the setback of the house.
Exactly.
Okay. Councilman Higgins?
Not entirely screened, obviously. Just you can't
screen to 6 feet.
Yes. Good.
What about on a house? Say that 6,000 square foot lot, and your example is on a corner lot.
It could be on the street side. It'd still be screened on the street side as well.
It would be okay as long as it has 6 feet of screening.
Yes.
Okay.
The other question we got, this came from farm.
Councilman,
sorry.
On that slide too, though. Fireman's eye, you have that tiny little lot, you park an RV next to it. Can your neighbor park an RV next to that and then have his house?
In theory,
have two houses and then two RVs and no space in between.
In the standard R16 districts, you're required to have one side yard of at least 10 feet wide. If the subdivision was constructed in such a way that the vehicle side yards were right next to each other, then yes, you could have RV to RV.
And then you have a potential fire spread problem.
Well, yeah. I was talking about this with Councilmember Fender during the break. Originally, the ordinance required that the RVs be parked in the rear quarter of the property. At the time the ordinance was prepared, boats were not covered under the ordinance. There was a compromise that was made in order to get boats back behind the fence. And the compromise was allowing RVs to come forward. Then that was the compromise the council made at that particular time. So that's the existing ordinance as we have it right now. The condition that you can see on the 6,000 square foot lot, the present ordinance allows. The question that we got from the public was they would like to put larger RVs in that side yard. And our staff response was, we can see that, but only on larger lots. And we thought that the 15,000 square foot lot minimum was appropriate.
I don't know what to do about it right now. I'm just, I guess, identifying it as a concern. Because essentially you have a house next to a trailer, next to a trailer, next to a house, and no separation from any of them. And I'm assuming the oleander's right in the middle. And that's going to be an issue.
Yeah, no, I understand your concern.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those hypothetical things. I agree with you. Technically, you have it. How often is that going to happen in the city?
It happens.
The percentage is probably low, but it does happen.
Yeah, I know it happens. Yeah. But I mean, once again, you could also have the same situation with two cars there. Granted, with an RV, it's a greater hazard. But if you have two automobiles there, if you have two trucks there, you still have two flammable type things that go there. So I guess what I'm getting at, where does it end? At some point in time, we can't look at every possible potential scenario. And I think the odds that two houses on 15,000 feet with 40-foot RVs parked together, it will happen. Even in a city our size, I can't imagine that happens very often. So, I mean, that's all I'm saying.
I could just say, Mayor, it happens more than we would like. And oftentimes, I will say this, too, it happens even with the RVs being there, because once you shrink that lot, I'm going to assume here that part of the reason that we have separations on those lots is to stop fire spread by having a 10-foot lot and 6-foot, that's 16 feet, gives them a fighting chance. I don't disagree with you. I just wonder how much we can do to...
Well, actually, the fire spread's only 6 feet.
The building code is actually 10 now. It was increased under the last building code.
The building code or the fire code?
Building code.
So it's no longer 6 feet on high, even on medium high density?
Yes, it's 10 feet now.
Okay, without a firewall?
Correct.
Okay. That's just happened last year or two?
And now we're going to park an RV there.
Fire code, it's like one or two fire or building codes ago.
Because I've been out of the business for a couple, 3 years. When I was in the business, it was still 6 feet.
So. Yeah, no, and then believe me, I've been repeating that same mistake until someone corrected me.
So it's been within the last couple of years. Yes. I've only been out of the business a couple of years.
Yeah, and it's been a while since I've been in code. So it's spread, because it was, I think you're right, it was six feet, and then it went to 10 feet for the spread, and now we got 10 feet, so we're going to park an RV in that 10 feet.
So 20 feet between buildings, but you'll have only about 6.
It's 5 and 5 on either side of the property.
But you can't park an RV in 5 feet.
No, true.
Yeah, then we don't have the problem.
So you're going to have at least, even at 10 feet, that RV is scraping the sides. So really, that's why I'm saying, it's not going to happen, because to have 10 feet and 10 feet even, RVs are, 9 feet wide. That's a real tight fit to have that on both sides. That's why I'm saying you're going to have a bigger separation, I think, in reality than what we're worried about.
There's nothing we could do about it. I'm just raising it.
Well, heck, we beat everything else to death today. Why not beat this one to death?
I'm already late.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. We got a request from the Farnsworth folks. They would like us to see shallower lots, but still keep the minimum 6,000 square feet. We think that's reasonable, because we're still getting a 6,000 square foot lot. This gives them a little bit more flexibility in their subdivision design. We have no objections to that. The big one we got from the Central Arizona Home Builders Association was to allow side entry to garages, the same encroachment that we were permitting for livable area into the front yard. Kind of presented this a couple of times before, where we were going to allow livable area and porches to encroach into the front yard where previously they had not been. And we'd have a separate setback, would be the traditional setback for garages. So in the 6,000 square foot lots, it was setback. Your garages are setback at 20 feet. Livable area is currently setback at 20 feet. We were going to allow livable area to come in 10 feet closer. The home builders would like us to have the same allowance for side entry garages. They think this will give them a little bit more variety in terms of their product design. We said that we would present this to the P&Z board and the city council. We'll continue to work through some of this. The P&Z board has some concerns architecturally with this, because they feel we may be creating a different type of monotony they're trying to avoid on this. So we might work through some design criteria with them and come back to you with a little bit more complete package when we see that. We got some folks up in the Desert Uplands area. I thought we were being, that the idea of having these encroachments for livable area in the front yard was a bad idea. It was going to create too much density. Quite frankly, we're trying to create a law for the entire city, and we think that this really addresses some problems that are primarily in the central, south, and western portions of the city. So we're going forward with the proposal as it stands right now. Another request that we got,
Gordon, Councilor Richards.
Just a quick question on that. If they're
HOA doesn't allow a certain encroachment standard,
then
which,
their CC&Rs
which
would be more restrictive.
CC&Rs would rule there.
Yes.
Okay.
And with that same thing, these everything still needs to come through design review, plan, you know, subdivision.
In single residence, it doesn't have to go through design review.
Okay. But the whole subdivision plat would ahead
no,
of time.
No, it does not. It goes to P&Z and then it comes
right.
to council.
Yeah.
The folks in the Desert Uplands, this was related more to the Parcel 51 issue. They have the parking garage that was going up, and they were trying to figure out a way to try to encourage underground parking and try to reduce the height of that to preserve their views. Our response to that was possibly a density bonus if to try to encourage underground parking. We can try to work out something like that and see if we can try to fit something like that into the ordinance. I'm not sure many folks are going to take that type of thing because even with a density bonus, underground parking is prohibitively expensive. Here's the garage placement issue, again, in the RS and the RSL. This is kind of what we're trying to avoid, the idea of getting this kind of monotony in terms of residential subdivision design, where you have nothing but garages in the front. And here's just kind of a quick diagram that kind of shows how the side entry garage would work with that encroachment. Basically, it would allow the garage would come in 10 foot forward, but it take the primary face of the livable area and actually push it 10 feet back if you're still going to get a two-car garage that would side in. And then here's actually some subdivisions in the city. This one's near Extension and Southern. But there are actually some subdivisions of the city that already have side entry garages as a primary elevation. This is just something I pulled down really quick from Google that shows an example of that. And then this again kind of shows kind of a 3D view. This is with the porch allowance that kind of pops into the front.
Is that the proverbial glass house?
Yeah, you can see right through that. This would kind of be kind of showing how this, again, how the side entry might work. Again, showing how it would push back the house itself. One other comment we got, there are some folks in the Desert Uplands that wanted to see us raise our design standards in their terminology, Scottsdale level. We pointed out that we've added additional design standards. We made this more quantitative as opposed to qualitative.
Is that more Scottsdale level or South Scottsdale level?
That's a good point. And we've also created allowance.
We want our monotonous brown and Mediterranean stucco to be at Scottsdale Mediterranean stucco versus a monotonous Mesa Mediterranean stucco. My houses were never monotonous and they weren't Scottsdale either.
I'm going to go.
But we feel we've addressed this with the current ordinance. They also asked us to increase open space requirements. And we've made mandatory certain open space ratios that are quantifiable both in the multiple residence and the RSL district. This came up from our Lehigh folks at the meeting that we had on Tuesday night. Currently, we prohibit portable storage containers. These are the metal shipping containers that people buy after they've been used and rusted out and those types of things. Currently, the code prohibits these. The Lehigh folks suggested that we would regulate these instead because they've seen several of these placed on people's properties within the Lehigh area and then try to, with the regulations, require them with certain architectural enhancements as well as certain bulk requirements. And we said we would study this and get back to them.
Question?
Yes.
Can they come in for a variance for some of those, or they're not allowed?
They're not allowed on a permanent basis. They can come in and get a special use permit to use them on a temporary basis, okay. Or they can use them concurrent with construction on the property.
Okay, thank you.
And then we had several comments, which I've handed out to you. I'm not going to elaborate on those, which we received yesterday, actually, from the Home Builders Association of Central Arizona. We hopefully will get together with most of the builders in Mesa, as well as staff, and try to hash these things through, prepare responses, and get those prepared for the P&Z board. And if you have any questions or concerns, Councilmember Fincher has presented me with a concern about small, portable, detached buildings in the side yard. We're going to be working on options to see if we can make those allowed. So and try to address some of the fire concerns.
Great. Any questions? Gordon, thank you so very much. Appreciate the
really
the great work you guys have been doing to move this along and to create a model zoning code. So thank you so much. All right. Acknowledge receipt of minutes of...
So moved.
Got a motion from the Councilmember Summers, second Vice Mayor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are accepted. Anyone want to report anything they've been to?
Pass.
We'll pass. Okay, scheduled meetings, general information. A couple of general information. It is Mr. Dave Richin's birthday this week. Next Monday?
No, it was this last
Monday.
It was this last Monday. In fact, I started celebrating on Friday and wrapped up most celebrations by Tuesday evening. So it was a really great, but I am looking forward to rolling more celebration into Father's Day on Sunday. So
okay.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Well, happy birthday. I'd like to remind everyone of the first, hopefully, annual Arizona Celebration of Freedom to take place on July 2nd and 3rd in downtown Mesa. Unlike anything you've seen in downtown Mesa, and the best celebration of freedom in the entire state. So mark your calendars, make your plans. It's going to be a great, great time to have a lot of events planned, including the Cool Zone. Come on down and be cool. Great place to be. Okay. Mr. Friedlein.
Yes, sir. Transportation and Infrastructure Committee meeting today has been canceled. Hope everybody knows that. This coming Monday, June 21st, we have a Public Safety Committee meeting at 3:30, and then it will be followed by a study session and a general council meeting. A week from today, June 24th, there'll be a study session at 7:30. Thursday, July 1st, there'll be a Community and Neighborhood Services Committee meeting at 3:30, and that'll be followed by a study session and a council meeting. That's our first council meeting of the month, and it's a Thursday, and there is no Thursday morning study session. It'll be a study session right after the Community and Neighborhood Services meeting. You already mentioned the celebration of freedom for July 2nd and 3rd. Tuesday, July 6th, we have an Audit and Finance Committee meeting at 4 o'clock. And our last meeting of July is Thursday, July 8th, a study session and a council meeting.
And nothing in the morning.
Nothing in the morning. Thank you so very much for your patience today. This was a marathon, but important. Appreciate it. So we have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Higgins, a second from Councilmember Finter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you so very much.